Sakrani. Okay. Right. Are there questions? Does not seem to be the case. Since there was a request for an office hour next week, I will try to schedule one, but there are some things I need to schedule first, so I can't yet give a time. I will post this on the course webpage. It probably will be either Tuesday around 11 or Wednesday around 10 or 11. But it really depends. There are a few things I need to schedule first before I can fix the time. Right. Otherwise, I'll have an office hour on Wednesday. Yeah? Yeah, sure. That's why I'm asking. 72, the first one, yes? Part B. Oh, you have part A. Part B is very easy. So what you do in part A, you show, so you have the symmetric group Sn and you have some permutations in Sn, which I'm giving to you. Okay. And now you take an arbitrary permutation G and you modify it by some of these elements, which in the end will be generated. You will have shown that they are generators. You modify it by these generators and you get something which lies in Sn minus 1, right? Because the point n is moved to itself. So you have a permutation. So what you can do is you can write, so you have B, which is G times, what is it, AI plus 1, and so forth, to AN minus 1. And you know this is in SN minus 1. Okay. Right. You can write this differently. You can write this, because these are elements of order 2, you can write instead G is equal to B, which is in SN minus 1 times AN minus 1, AN minus 2, and so forth, AI plus 1, AI, right? You just multiply with these elements from the right one by one, and because you multiply them, they go off this way, they come up in the reverse order. If you take your clothes off and put them on a heap, the sweater is below the undershirt or so. Right. And now by induction, you just say, by induction, element B can be written as a product of such elements. That's your induction hypothesis. And then this is basically your inductive step. This says, yes, if B can be written in this form, G also can be written in this form, because you just have further elements of this type. And therefore, every element can be written in this form. Well, otherwise you can't do induction, right? If this wasn't in Sn minus 1, if this was just in Sn, you couldn't use induction on some smaller object. Your smaller object is the symmetric group on one less point. Does this answer? Okay. Sorry?
Part C.
Part C. Oh. Part C really is just a calculation. I mean, part C is just a calculation. Let me just give you an example. Let's say we pick A1 and A2, and that problem is just about generic AI and AI plus 1. So A1 is 1, 2, A2 is 2, 3. Okay. Now we calculate, it just asks you to calculate A1, A2, A1, and it asks when A2, A1, A2. What are these? A1, A2, A1 maps 1 to 2, to 3 stays fixed. So 1 goes to 3. What happens with 3? Stays fixed, moves to 2, moves to... Sorry. Have I done this correct? 3 under A1 stays fixed, under A2 moves to 2, under A1 moves to 1. So this is 1, 3. 2 would move to 1, stay fixed, move back to 2. Yes. What is A2, A1, A2? That's the permutation 1 stays fixed, gets moved to 2, gets moved to 3. 3 gets moved to 2, gets moved to 1, stays fixed. So they are the same. Okay, and the problem is just to show not just for 1 and 2, this is the case for I equals 1, but to show it in general. And you can show it, for example, by just looking at either you write this as permutation with I plus 1 and I plus 1, I plus 2, and you just have variables in there in your cycles, or you look at images of points. So that's all what part C asks about, to do this calculation. The reason this calculation itself might look rather boring. Why on earth am I bothering with it? Well, the reason why one bothers with this is that this is basically an identity which holds for more general objects. If you take something, and these are called braids and are interesting objects which occur in more advanced mathematics, you have several strings. Well, let me see whether I can do this. So we have several strings hanging down. And now, let's say we have 3 strings. And now I define operations where I say A1 would be move the leftmost string in front of the middle string. And A2 would be move the middle string in front of the rightmost string. So if I start, A2 would be move the middle string in front of the rightmost string. Okay, so if you do these operations, you're basically twisting these strings, and you create what is called a braid. Okay, if you look at these operations, that's what this picture is trying to indicate. This kind of identity also holds for twisting the strings. But these are not anymore elements of order 2. If I move the left over the middle, and I move again the left over the middle, and the left over the middle, and the left over the middle, I twist this up more and more. So that does not hold anymore, but this other identity still holds, and because of this, this is called a braid relation. And that's the bigger context where this is in. That's why I... And what one can also show is that basically these braid relations and the fact that the generators of order 2 in some way define the symmetric group. Though I haven't really told you what I exactly mean by define. Basically, if you have a group in which you have elements which I have order 2, and they fulfill these relations, it must be a symmetric group. Okay, other questions? No? Okay, so, since it's so important, let me repeat the thing which we did at the end of Friday's lecture. So I have a group G which acts on omega, on a set omega, and I pick one point, little omega, in there. And I ask, when do two elements G and H in G have the same image? And what I do is, I also pick a particular subgroup. Let's say H is the stabilizer in G of this point omega. It's those group elements which map omega to itself. So in this homework problem here, what you're basically showing, Sn minus 1 would be the stabilizer in Sn of the point n. So that's the more general context for such a situation. Okay, so we take the stabilizer of the point omega. Okay, so now when do two elements have the same image? Well, this is clearly the case if the image of omega under G is the same as the image of omega under H, right? That's just the same statement written down in formulas. And if you don't like to write it this way, you could write it as alpha omega comma H, and you could write this as alpha omega comma G using the formal definition of a group action. Okay, well, if this is the case, if these are equal, now I act on both with G inverse. So now act
with G inverse. So what will happen? I take the image of omega under G, and then under G inverse is the same as the image of omega under H, and then under G inverse. And the way how group actions work, if I act with one element and then with another element, I can instead act with a product. So this is the image of omega under H G inverse. Similarly, what is this here? This is the image of omega under G times G inverse, which is the image of omega under the identity. And the other condition for group actions which we have is that the identity maps every element to itself. So this is omega. So what have we seen? We have seen that the image of omega under H times G inverse is omega again. But that just means that H times G inverse is in the stabilizer in G of the point little omega. That's the definition of the stabilizer. And the stabilizer we had called H, big H. This was the subgroup. Okay, so now I have two elements such that the quotient H times G inverse lies in this subgroup. If we look back at the definition of cosets, this is the case if and only if the coset HG is the same as the coset, well, HG is always the same as HG, as the coset HH. So two elements have this give, the, sorry, the point omega has the same image under two group elements G and H if G and H lie in the same coset of the point stabilizer. Okay, so what does this mean? This means the following. There is a one-to-one correspondence between the orbit of omega, of little omega, and what was the orbit? The orbit where all possible images of the point little omega under elements of the group and the cosets of the point stabilizer of this point omega. And how is the correspondence? The correspondence is that an element in the orbit omega comma g corresponds to the coset with representative g. And what we've just calculated here is that indeed this is a correspondence. If two elements have the same image, they lie in the same coset, vice versa, either you go backwards or you take the way how it wrote it up, how I wrote it up on Friday. If they lie in the same coset, they have the same image. So we have exactly as many cosets as we have images. Okay. So, for example, let's say I take an example like this here. I take G is the symmetric group Sn, or we can even, if you want to have it concrete, let's say we take the symmetric group S6. Let's say we take for omega the points 1 up to 6. We take for little omega, let's say, the point 1. We take H is the stabilizer in G of 1. What is the orbit of this point under the group? It's all the images. Clearly, if I have all permutations I can on 6 points, I can move this point 1 to any point I want. So I get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. And so my claim is, what this theorem claims is, I have exactly 6 cosets. What are the cosets? The cosets correspond to these points
via elements which map one to all the images. So I have here the cosets H, and now I need a permutation which maps one to itself. Well, I can take the identity. Here I need a permutation which maps 1 to 2. Here I need a permutation which maps 1 to 3. Here I need a permutation which maps 1 to 4. Here I need a permutation which maps 1 to 5. And finally one which maps 1 to 6. And you could now go through and check that indeed these six things are all different cosets. But the theorem tells us already they are different cosets. We don't really need to check it again. But if you want an independent verification, you could do this. Right. So the cosets, if a group is acting and a subgroup is a point stabilizer, the cosets just correspond to the different images of that point. They are all elements which give the same image lie in one coset. And in that way, cosets are a very natural way to partition the elements of a group. Okay, well, this has a couple of important consequences. Namely, how many cosets do we have? Well, as many cosets as we have elements in the orbit, right? So we have the number of elements in the orbit is the same as the number of cosets. And what was the number of cosets? That's what we call the index, right? That's the index of the stabilizer in G of the point little omega. The stabilizer index is by definition the number of cosets, but now we know the number of cosets is also the length of the orbit. Okay. So what is this good for? We can use this, for example, to calculate the order of the group in certain cases. And that's indeed it's done via some iterations, but that's how the computer can calculate the order of a large group without having to write down all elements. So as a corollary, we get the order of the group is the number of elements in the orbit times the order of the stabilizer of the point, right? And because I know that this index by Lagrange's theorem, this is the order of the group divided by the order of the stabilizer of this point. Okay, and now if you just multiply with the stabilizer order through, you have this equation here. Right. So let's look at this in some example. I want to calculate how many rotations do I have for this cube. Again, not looking at it as a puzzle, but looking at it as a solid cube. How many rotations are there? Well, let's say I have this act on the faces. I have six faces, right? And I can move one face, let's say I choose, I had the red one last time. I can move the red face to wherever I want, to any other face I want. So, for example, G is the rotations of cube. Of cube, and omega are the faces. If I take one face, I can move it to any other face, right? So my orbit has length 6. Then the length of this orbit is 6. Okay, what is the stabilizer of this face? Well, if I want to stabilize this red face here in the front, the only thing I can do is I can rotate around this axis, right? And how many rotations do I have? I have 4 possible rotations. So the order of the stabilizer in G of the point omega is 4. So together I know the order of the group is 24. And I've given this argument in a vague form before, but I didn't really give a justification for it.
Now we have a justification for it. So we know there are 24 rotations. And if my group was bigger, I might have to do the same argument again for the stabilizer by taking a stabilizer of some other point in there. And that's what the computer does. And thereby can calculate the orders of huge groups, of orders multiple billions, without having to write down the elements. Right. There is nothing special about the faces here. I could take something else. Let's say I take a corner, right? If I have it act on corners, this corner can be mapped to any of the 8 corners with rotations. So my orbit would have length 8. What's the stabilizer if I fix this corner? Well, then I can basically just rotate around this axis. And how many rotations do I have? 3, because if you look at it from the front, you see that you have a threefold symmetry here. 8 times 3 is 24. Or, if you want to act on edges, there are 12 edges. If I fix an edge, let's say if I fix this edge, I can only rotate on this axis here. 180 degrees, my stabilizer has order 2. So again, 12 times 2 would give me 24. If I wanted to do not just rotations, but also reflections, well, I can't show you a reflection physically with this, but if you just considered what would happen under, well, I would have had to label the points and bring a mirror or something like this. But if I also want to allow reflections, what group do I get there? Well, let's say I take again the face, acting on the faces. My face has still an orbit of length 6, because I haven't created new faces. So then I have 6, but what is the stabilizer? Now the stabilizer, if I also allow reflections, I don't just have the 4 rotations, I also have reflections, right? Then my situation is the same as this example of the symmetries of a square, which we had early on in the course. There I have 8 such symmetries. So if I allow rotations and reflections, I have 6 times 8, which is 48 symmetries. So I can calculate, if I have a group acting on something, I can use this to calculate the order of the group in a rather convenient way. And one of the homework problems is basically about this. There, you don't take a cube. There, you take a dodecahedron. This has 12 faces, and it's not hard to see that rotation symmetries can map every face to every other face. So your orbit length is 12. And for your stabilizer, well, you have a pentagonal face, but you basically can just rotate. So that will give you, as a product, will give you the order of that group. Or let's say, well, I don't have an example here. If I wanted to do the thing with a tetrahedron, right? A tetrahedron is a pyramid with a triangular base. How many rotations does a tetrahedron have? Well, let's say I have it act on the corners of the tetrahedron. Doesn't really matter whether I take corners or faces, because there are 4 of each. This corner clearly can be mapped to any other corner by a rotation. So my orbit has length 4. What is the stabilizer of this corner? Well, if I want to stabilize this corner, the only thing I can do is rotate on this axis, which goes through this corner and the middle point of the opposite face. Well, these rotations basically then come from rotations of this bottom face, which is a triangle. So my stabilizer has order, if I only allow rotations, the stabilizer has order 3. So there are 4 times 3, 12 rotational symmetries of a tetrahedron. And this is much, much easier than trying to figure them all out and writing them down. Starting with the fact that I don't need to worry how I actually write them down. With names, it's awkward to come up with reasonable names. To write them down with matrices is really nasty, because you need to calculate what the coordinates of your corners are. And that's basically a penalty exercise in trigonometry. Okay, so we can use this to calculate orders of groups. Right, before erasing things, any questions so far?
Well, there is another application, and this is basically about how one, that's what I promised you before, how one can come actually up with a solution strategy for a puzzle like Rubik's Cube. Namely, the solution strategy is, and if someone wants to mix up a cube, yeah? Right. So you've probably seen this. There are strategies which say, okay, if you want actually to solve this puzzle, you could solve it. There are strategies how to solve it by hand. Thank you. And these strategies basically work by saying, take the mixed up cube and first try to make one face correct. And then they give you operations which only fix this one face, which fix this face, which is already brought in the right situation, and then just mess something up with the rest. That's what these solution strategies do. Okay, how can one come up with such a solution strategy? Well, basically what you need to do is you need to find elements in the stabilizer, right? Fixing an element which fixes certain things is just an element in the stabilizer. That's all what you need. Okay, so how can we come up with such elements? Again, we basically use this fact. We use this fact, if we can't come up immediately with an element in the stabilizer, it's good enough if we find two elements which have the same image. Namely, if something has the same image under two elements, we know that the quotient has to lie in the stabilizer. So, yeah, how can we come up with such elements? What we do is basically we calculate the orbit. And how can we calculate the orbit? That's exactly the same process which we had before for determining all elements of a group. Right? Determining all elements of the group was we take the elements we have so far and we multiply through with all the generators. And we iterate this process. To get the orbit, I do exactly the same. I calculate, I take my point, I take the image under all the generators of the group. And of those images, again, I take the image under all the generators, and so forth, till I'm done. Till I don't get any more images. And since every element can be written as product of generators, this will give me all the images. So it's basically the same as enumerating the elements, just what I deal with are not the elements, but the images of the points, of the one point. However, I can still keep track of what my group elements are and thereby get representatives. And that's basically what this algorithm, which is rather formally written down here, does. So what I'm doing is I take the cube, again, I have the faces labeled with numbers, and I know already the way just to deal with the space rotations that I wanted one corner fixed. Okay, now let's say I take another point, this point 23. Suppose I want to fix this as well. I calculate the orbit of 23 under the group, and that's what's happening here on the bottom of the sheet. So I can find, for example, if I do a rotation of the left slice rightwards, then 23, let me see, actually put this, I can get this camera on. I can move 23 under a left rotation of the left slice, 23 moves to where 18 was before. Okay. Or if I do a left rotation and top rotation, it moves to where 14 was before. Let me just show you this. here, if once this is okay, I want this on. Okay, now it's on. And okay. Okay. So can I zoom in a bit? Not with this one. Well, I can should be able to zoom with this. Okay. So I have on the bottom, let's turn it around to have the bottom here. 23. Now I do a rotation of the left slice, right? I rotate this left slice here. What happens? Where did 23 go? 23 went here. And what was there before? Before there was 18, right? Under the left slice rotation, 24 goes to 18. If I do left slice rotation and top rotation, 23 goes here, where before there was the 14, and so forth. So that's how this table has been created. However, what will happen is, these are just the new images. Sometimes it happens that I do a certain rotation and the point gets mapped to one which I have before. Easiest example, if I do the top rotation, right? If I do the top rotation, clearly 23 is mapped to itself because it does not get affected by it. Or if I do the front rotation. So what I then can say is I can take, or I could get some element that, say I have 14 is obtained under left rotation and top rotation. If I now apply a left rotation again, after having moved it to 14. Well, 14 is on the right slice, so the left rotation is not doing anything. So left, top, left is the same image as left, top. And then, using this equivalence, I know that the quotient of these representatives must lie in the stabilizer. And one can prove, the proof I'm not giving you here, is that if I take enough of these elements, they actually generate the stabilizer. So that's simply what I've done here. I've done this very systematically to generate more and more such elements which are in the stabilizer. So, for example, one could, so we know in this example that the image of a 23 under left top, 23 to the left and then top, this is 14, and if I take 23 on the left, top left is also 14, so I can see the quotient. What is the quotient? Left, top, now the quotient here, left inverse, top inverse, left inverse, must also lie in the stabilizer of 23. And because top rotation already lies in there, I can basically get that in the end. I can simplify it a little bit. I could put this in there, but I could find some shorter generator, namely left inverse top left. Okay, so now I have elements which fix 23. Similarly, by iterating this, I can find elements which don't just fix 23 but also fix 21 and 22. And now I have elements which fix a whole slice. And that's what I've done here. And basically, I came up in this group and that's what I've drawn here with the images. I've given you two particular generators, and I've given what they are doing. They are obtained in this way. Okay, what does one do? One of them is keeping the front left stone fixed, it's rotating the one on the front right, and is swapping the two in the front, in the top back. Okay, so do we need to, actually let's look at our mixed tube here. Do I still need to permute stones? No, this one is in the right position, this one is in the right position, and this one is in the right position. So I don't need to swap stones anymore. I just need to rotate them.
But I have another generator there, and that's the second generator here. This is rotating the two top front stones. Okay, so this is performing a rotation, and the picture is just drawn from the numbers what the permutations do, that this face here would, this face here would move up here, this one would move here, and this one would move here, and simultaneously this one would move here. So this would do a simultaneous rotation of both stones. Clearly for this stone that's the right thing what we have to do. And what it found by doing iteratively such quotients, it found this element, it said, it's what operation is it? Left inverse, front, left inverse, front, top inverse, left inverse, top, top, front, front, left, top. And indeed, I've brought this stone into the right form. Okay, now I rotate the whole cube. I could give other generators as conjugates, but basically the easiest way to deal with it is just to say, now I rotate the whole cube in space. Now I want to do the same thing. Now, however, this yellow stone needs that doesn't just need to go up here, but needs to go the other way. So either I need to do this operation twice, or I need to do the inverse, because this is an operation of order 3. How do I get the inverse? That's easier by just reading the word through backwards and doing the inverse operations. So I do top inverse, left inverse, front inverse twice, top inverse twice, left, top, front inverse, left, front inverse, and left inverse. And I have it back in the original position. So these elements in the stabilizers, in higher stabilizers, which are elements which help me in solving this such a puzzle, these elements come iteratively by saying certain points have the same image under certain elements, and then I take the quotient. And that automatically typically gives me elements where I have some element and some other element inverse here, or products of elements. This is really the very natural structure which I get there. And doing it is somewhat tedious, and that's why I didn't try to derive it here on the board, but it's very systematically, and that's the same way how one can come up with a solution strategy for the 3x3 cube or 4x4 cube or whatever kind of these kinds of puzzles you have. Furthermore, again, using the order argument, you can also, what you do iteratively then is you get stabilizers, you have a couple of orbits, and in the end, at the very end, basically we have this one stabilizer which is just generated by the element of order 3 which rotates these front two cubies. So that is all, this is clearly this element alone, this subgroup, where everything else but these two, the rotational arrangements of these two front cubies, everything else is fixed. So if I do this, this subgroup clearly has order 3. Okay, then the previous subgroup there, one stone, this is again the image before, one stone on the top is fixed, but the others still somehow are moved around. Well, the stones are three of them, but since they are also rotated, this stone is fixed, two stones are permuted, and one is rotated. I can go through this, and if I check, I can choose one face, and I can get an orbit length. And if in the end, I take the order of this last subgroup, which was 3, and I multiply it with the orbit length, and that's basically the product I've done here on the very bottom in the denominator, Sorry, no, what have I done? Where did I do this? Sorry, no, if I multiply this together, sorry, then I get as order 3,674,160, which is the total number of symmetries, and I get this without actually enumerating the elements. And that's exactly what the computer does for enumerating the elements. So this correspondence of cosets and images of a stabilizer, cosets of a stabilizer and images of a point, where the stabilizer is the stabilizer of this point, with this correspondence, I can, for example, come up with such solution strategies for these puzzles where the puzzle is a group. I could do the same solution thing to get a solution strategy for this puzzle where I had these two interleaving rings. Doing it by hand to come up with a strategy is not necessarily that exciting. And in particular for this puzzle with the rings, it gets very quickly rather tedious since you have to do a lot of rotations around. And it takes quite a while to solve this. But that's how one can come up with these strategies. Okay, so that's groups acting on a set. And that gave us an interpretation of what cosets of the stabilizer are. In this code context, cosets are very natural objects which come up. Well, one thing, and that's basically how I started with the motivation for this action, is to say, I can also take the elements of this set omega, and I can just give them numbers. For example, here, I had originally really these are the faces, and now I put numbers on, and thereby every symmetry corresponds to a permutation. Well, what is the formal context for this? I really have a map from my group of abstract symmetries or physical symmetries to a group of permutations. And this map has the property that it preserves group products and group inverses. Well, something like this we had before when we looked at rings. There we looked at maps which go from one ring to another and preserve the ring operations. Now we have a map from one group to another which preserves the group operations. And that's what we will call a group homomorphism. Okay. I don't want to start now with this definition. Here, instead, what I have is the course evaluation. Let's pass these around.
Can I ask you a question about what you have on the board?
Yeah.
You had group 23.
The point 23.
Right.
The point 23 is mapped under doing left, and top is mapped to 14. Oh, sorry. Why did I say 12? Okay. Why did I say 12? Sorry. 14. 14 I wanted here. Yeah, sorry. Right. Is one of you anyhow going later today to the math department? No.
Like right after class?
Or something.
I can take it over there.
Okay. Could you, this is just the cover sheet and the envelope, could you take it to the front office? Mm-hmm. Okay. The instructions ask that I should leave the room while it is filled out, so I will just erase the board. I'll go outside, but I'll wait. If someone has a question, I'll wait outside just so you can have the question still answered. Yeah, thank you, and I'll see you on Wednesday.